Do you really think it all? Yeah. The government cares about you. They ain't giving up a second thought. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. I know it's Wednesday. Got to get over the hump, and you will. Hope you're going to have a great day today, family. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, it will get done because you'll get it done. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world, is this program. Go to timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. There will be programs that are dated and titled, and they are updated. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. The other program that we have here, and all times are going to give you, are Eastern Times. Monday and Wednesday from 7 to 9. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Monday and Wednesday, Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. On Thursdays from 8 to 10, The Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club from 8 to 10 on Thursdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, family. It's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. Sunday, 5 to 6 p.m., from 5 to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney with activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Pinckney to Pinckney. And then, of course, at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah, I tell you, family, sir. Hold on, I'm trying to do something here. Turn this phone off. I know. Okay, we did it. Baba Baruti Mama Yah. The Complementarity Conference is coming up. I'll give you more details in the mid-program before the break. I know school's about to be out here in Atlanta. Oh, in fact, it is out in most schools. And so I know Baba Baruti have a summer program. We'll talk about that as well. But we're going to go to the Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Also to Baba Baruti said. Thank you. Forgive me, family. Also, too, Baba Rudy said they're going to make another book of Inyasa Sim. They have two of them, and I've been reading them back and forth for a few years now, but they're always good. Always learn more. Every time you read it, just like the Great Pyramid K 2019 documentary. Every time I look at it, I always get something else, something new. May 27th. You must act as if it's impossible to fail. You must act as if it is impossible to fail. African proverb. We know that all the substance of a righteously
enraged warrior, a true Asafo sage, Jegna, is very different from that of the average African. This substance we call character, and at the very center of this nature lies an instinctual intrepidation, fundamentally altruistic humility, a tested resilience, a critically intelligent common sense, a creative persistent ingenuity, a vision of independence for all that is African, an immeasurable patience for the flaws in self and people, a righteousness grounded in knowing nothing is better than the African idea, a fortitude in the face of overwhelming adversities, an undying sense of duty and obligation to the tradition of African people, and an absolute, uncompromisable belief in the fact that death is preferable to submission. These are the qualities our best warriors aspire to and possess. They are the exact opposite, whether in whole or in significantly as a part, of the severely compromised character of those Negroes Africans whose vision of life is held captive within the death of the European nightmare. Ashe. Affirm, I act and knowingly I cannot fail. Affirm, I act and knowing I cannot fail. I cannot fail. May 28th. Till we have African men in the seat of power, respected, feared, hated, and revered, our young men will never rise for the reason they never look up. Wow, that's a deep quote. Let me read it again. Till we have African men in the seat of power, respected, feared, hated, and revered, our young men will never rise for the reason they will never look up. Great ancestor, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, who said, God is black, he's got to be black. Because if God is a white man, there is no hope. If there's nothing to see, people tend not to look up. So there has to be a presence here and now, wherever our Jegnas are, our Jegna, our Jegnocks. For Asafo to want to fulfill their warrior's mission, it's time for their gathering of old men and women. Our elders must set an example of warriorhood in the tradition of the ageless warrior. It's time for a vanguard of elders willing to risk their fixed incomes, I say, and ignore their aches and pains, I know, to clear the revolutionary path by practical example. Acts of liberation can only be taught through demonstration. What is there to lose but one's ancestralship? This is not a call for our elders to become anarchists. That is a European disposition. Chaos for the sake of chaos. Destruction for the sake of destruction. Destruction and chaos simply for their own sake is counterproductive. When in the end, the old European order is simply replaced with a new European order. This is not what we are after. And European culture cannot be changed into anything African. We have to see that historically, anarchy is a European strategy where the frustrated dispossessed seek to undermine the stability and security of their empowered brothers so they can replace them by appropriating their privilege. Anarchy is only an effective nation-building tool if used in the context of a conscious vision. Ashe. Affirm, I exude a power rightfully respected, feared, and hated. Affirm, I exude a power rightfully respected, feared, and hated. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Ashe. Yeah. I tell you, I got to say this because we had Brother Ayo Kamathi, the irritated genie scheduled today, called me up and had to cancel. But I know we'll get him back on. He's a good brother, sincere brother. And we have to meditate and pray and all that we can to this brother's sake, because he's out there on a real battlefield with some real evil. I mean, evil ass people. These European Jews ain't, I mean, evil. I don't know about you, but when I watch stuff here in this country, knowing what the, and I think what it is, knowing who these European Jews truly are. Now, if you want to know, then you got to get the brother's book, Jews Are the Problem. And his second book, Jews Are the Problem Too, The Psychology of the European Jew. These are Ashkenazi. These are European Jews. That's why they don't take a DNA test. Because why? They're not Hebrew. They're not from the time of the... These are not. These are late converts to Judaism who dominate and control Judaism and dictate to the world. That's who these people are. And so it's important for us to understand that and to understand who they are, so we can, you know, do what is necessary to change that dynamic. It's incumbent upon us, family. We cannot allow ourselves, and I know many of the elected officials, and particularly the American African ones, upon being elected, particularly to a national audience, to a national position, you know, Congress, Senate, whatever, immediately, first thing out their damn mouth, pledge allegiance to Israel, pledge allegiance to the European Jews, and not understanding who these people really are. Number one, I can't stand, and you know, there's a lot of, you know me, a lot of words that just, they're very problematic to me, because in a society like this, who dominate and control language, you know, these are not, these people are not Semitic. They're not Semitic. So if they're not Semitic, and you challenge them, you can't be anti-Semitic because they're not Semitic. And Semitic, what does that mean? Semi. Like right now in the NBA, the National Basketball Association, there's conference championships, the Western and the Eastern. And so these are the semi championships. Semi. It's just like in all the other sports. When you have 16 teams, that comes down to 8, comes down to 4. When it comes down to 4, these are the semis, because after those 4 teams, 2 teams play each other. The winners of those conferences or something, they play in the championship. And it looks like it's going to be Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Indianapolis. Hey, I don't want to hear that. Who punched that anyways? It's going to be the Indiana Pacers, the Indianapolis Pacers. Well, they take a state name, just like Minnesota take a state name. And so that's what it's going to be. And it's going to be good, although I'm quite sure that the big money folks don't really want that to happen, because they want New York in. That's right. New York is the biggest market in this country. So, but they're not, because Indiana's going to be in against OKC. And that's going to be a good series, family. It really is. But anyway, let me get back to the real issue. Because now that you know semi and semifinals, the finals and semifinals,
Well, that's them. Semi means half.
Half what? Half what? The argument and understanding was half whatever the culture was. Half black. I like Nasser when he, you know, saw these European Jews taking Palestine in the 40s and what's his name? Herzl. Theodore Herzl. And all them cats, man, Menachem Begin and Ariel Sharon. Oh, Ariel Sharon, I couldn't stand his ass. And, well, I definitely can't stand Bibi Netanyahu. I can't stand these crackers. I'm serious. Because they're evil. They're evil. And they've taken a situation that is not theirs. They've taken a country that is not theirs. They manipulate. Do you know who controls Diamond's family? Do you know who controls Diamond's in the world family? European Jews. If you look up Israel and you say, what is Israel's main import? Diamonds. What is Israel's main export? Diamonds. Saturday Night Live. Because, you know, in New York, you can, in the district, and there's a district in New York, in Diamond District, you see them trading diamonds in on the streets, even, let alone in the diamond houses where you come and bring some diamonds and they all polished and so forth, or rough, and they look at the quality of them and they can be, and they trade. The Hasidics, you know, the European Jews with the little curl, with the big ass hat. Yeah. I mean, and there are some European Jews who are against Zionism, you know. Few, very few, because the predominance are for it, and they believe. And it's interesting when you begin to look at that and what they believe about non-Jews. Non-Jews. And of course, they put all the other Jews into the non-Jews, the Fausa Jews, the African Jews, the Ethiopians, and so forth. These are Jews, you know. The black Hebrew Israelites, which of course, they live in an area that used to be a detonating spot for atomic weapons, Dimona, Israel. Yeah. Where Ben Amin, brother from Chicago, got the people to come together. And first they settled in. Oh, what was it they settled in first? I think it was Liberia as they moved across the Atlantic. And then they moved across Africa to the so-called Middle East. And they settled into Dimona, Israel. Don't hear too much about them because, you know, they who dominates and control Judaism, who dominate and control the land that was Palestine to be Israel, are European Jews. But they're not Semitic, right? I just pointed that out. So how can they constantly talk about anti-Semitism? Anti-Semitism. I am sick of it. I am sick of it. Yeah. And so, I don't know how it happens with you, family, if you go on Facebook and if you put in stuff and you look for stuff and you develop an algorithm, and then suddenly the stuff that you kind of are into, because I get conspiracy shit all the time. I'm inundated. You know, if you listen to this program, you know annually. I guess because as a firefighter, I've known this for a long, almost since the inception, almost since it happened. And And I've been talking about it since it happened. And since I've had a radio program over 11 years, every year around 9/11, I talk about the inside job that was 9/11. You know? And now I'm just, because a lot of records are open, they've been sending all kinds of good stuff. So I got to sort through that and so I can present to you, you know, just really substantiate the fact that, no, these Arabs, these Saudi Arabians didn't go to flight school, you know, because you go to flight school, you don't learn how to fly 747s. No. You know. And then some of the other funny things is like the dude's passport. I don't know if it was Adam's passport, but allegedly one of the hijackers' passport intact. I guess when the plane hit the thing and blew up, it just jetted that thing right out of his pocket, right out of his coat, whatever the hell it was, and landed where even though there might have been some debris around it, but it was visible and probably wasn't even dusty because, you know, they pulverized those two buildings. That's what they did. They pulverized them. They were blowing stuff as the buildings were coming down to make sure that it fell straight down. Because if you are into this, the architects, this kid named Richard Gage, who's my grandson's name, Gage. Richard Gage has been on the thing. Architects for 9/11 Truth had just a few, 10, 15 years ago, had just a few. I think there's over 2,000 who believe, who are adamant about no cats who hijacked some planes and out of, what was it, Boston or something like that? I don't know. Newark, whatever, they hijacked those planes and ran two of them into the World Trade Center. One of them that was shot down allegedly in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That's another mystery right there. And you know how I do this? And also, too, got to always throw Building 7, which was a building that went down. Classic demolition. The middle of the building started to go down and then the whole thing sank in under its own footprint. But also, too, I always use this, family. I said, I'll give you these twin towers going down. I'll give you Shanksville, but you can never, ever in my life, hell, in your life, make me believe that a plane was flying so fast and so low that when the nose of the plane hit the Pentagon, it disintegrated. The plane did, because you don't see no wings. You don't see no fuselage. You don't see no tail. You don't even see the black damn box, because the plane didn't hit it. Everything confiscated by this government around the radius of the Pentagon. So you don't see shit but this bright light that hits the Pentagon. So we'll talk about that when that time comes up. But right now, we're talking about things that are happening. We want to talk about what's happening with Africa. What's happening with Ibrahim Traoré. What's happening with the Sahel. What's happening with the prospects of unity for African people. Africa must unite. I'm a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And that's the objective, that we unite by 2030. Now, there's been some other dates, you know, the Jehovah's Witness always creating, this is going to be the end time right now in 2019 or this, that, and the other, and it shit don't happen. But there's something about Africa uniting that can happen and that must happen. Africa must unite, and That is what's happening now. And let me play this particular piece. You know, and of course you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Let's play this particular piece right here. This is the deep part here. Yes, family. We've been, you know, constantly duped, fooled, and played. It's hard to think of how brilliant we were at one time. But we don't know the depths and the evilness of the European. You know, from ancient times, and I'm going to go to New Orleans this weekend and next Monday. I'm to my presentation on our historical greatness. Our historical greatness. And the reason why I constantly do it and because many of us don't know. Many of us have been led to believe because they don't teach it in schools. I did when I had the opportunity to work in Milwaukee Public Schools on my off day, you know, as a firefighter, work one day off too. And so on my off days, that's what I would do. And I would try my best to give the young people information about themselves to help them know that you just weren't running around the jungle with a rag up your ass and a bone through your nose.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Any kind of civilization of any kind. Nothing could be furthest from the truth. So, no, we didn't do it. Let me take a call here. Good morning. Good morning, Jay.
Yo, I thought Jeannie was on.
Yeah, I did too. No, he called me up, man. He had to cancel. There's something he felt that he had to do as it relates to working with.
Hey.
Yeah, because, you know, he.
Well, I tried to tune in early. I had a hot minute. I wanted to hear what the brothers said. Yeah. I'll get back to you in an hour, bro.
All right. All right. Jay. All right, brother.
My brother.
Thank you. Peace. Peace. Yeah, right on, Jay. Yeah, I wanted Jeannie to be here too, because man, but we're off into it, but yeah, you know, so I was blessed to work with these young people, and I always told them that I'm going to tell you something and show you things and teach you things that you would not get in these schools about who we are. And so, you know, I always broke it down from the beginning, because we are from the beginning. You know, in fact, in ancient Kemet, when the Greeks came to studying at our feet, thousands of years after the great civilization, still it was the dynasties, but they're on their decline. You know, 25th dynasty was our last great walk in the sun. There are 30 dynasties. And of course, it ends with the Greeks. We allowed them and we taught them and they sat at our feet to study, you know, the great so-called philosophers, you know. In fact, first philosopher was Socrates. He went back to Greece and they killed his ass because he said, what are you bringing these foreign concepts in here? You know, made him drink hemlock. Plato saw what was happening and he cut out and he stayed in Kemet 20-some years, you know. But then they came in as conquerors after they studied at our feet. And they began to whitewash. They began to go into the temples and lighten stuff. They didn't. I'm being real here. This is what they've done. This is who they are. You know? To the point that even the Arabs think ancient Kemet is theirs. There's been this cat who has once again on Facebook, who claims it is not African. Just like Azita Wass. I can't stand his ass. Azita Wass, who was the antiquities chair at the Cairo Museum. Oh, they were not black. But they're not black. They're not black. Man. That's why, brothers and sisters, listen to me. That's why we must hold in high regard. And we owe a great debt of gratitude to Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. Diop. D-I-O-P. Diop. But Diop. Because him and another brother who's still living, Dr. Thelophilia Obinga, who was a linguistic, those two brothers went to the symposium of who are the ancient Kemetic people. Who are they? And they just kicked their ass. They were the only two Africans there. Everybody else was Caucasian or Arab or whatever. They kicked ass. The smoking gun, and you know, in that phrase, in murder mysteries and so forth, my lady, she loves murder mysteries, that there's a point where there's so much deep evidence that is pure. This is the smoking. This is I got you. You know, you can't dispute it. He developed a melanin dosage test. He could take just a piece, some DNA of the mummies, and tell how much melanin was in their body, in their skin. This was the smoking gun. Because they were not Arabs. They were not white. They were not Greeks or Romans. They were Africans. And just as George G.M. James wrote in his great work, Stolen Legacy, that's who they are. They're thieves. They're cultural thieves. And so we taught them then. Oh, but what happened? Islam sweeps over North Africa in the 600th, 7th century. And then many Africans who just said, hey, okay, this is what you bring. And I know many people bring in religion, a theology, under the threat of what? Death. Either you succumb or you're going to die. And so the Moors go up. They cross the Iberian Peninsula and they go up into Spain, Portugal. And we taught them again, family. From 711, thank heaven for 711, from 711 to 1492, when Columbus sailed the ocean blue. It's an old bull. And so they got together, the Europeans got together, and they said, hey, we may war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us, and we are going to dominate and dictate what history should be. But what did we do while we were there in the Iberian Peninsula of Spain and Portugal? We provided water for them. We told them to get them damn animals out of the castles and put them in a corral. Bathing. The aqueducts we did. Oh, I'm telling you. Once again. And then once, what did they do again? Even worse. Even worse this time. They enslaved us. They took us across the ocean to other hemispheres. Then what did they do after they knew that this barbaric thing was so bad that many countries said, well, now I'm going to give it up. Well, you know, I'm going to give it up only because I got out of it what I wanted to get out of it. I dominate sugar. I dominate tobacco, you know, and so forth. And then they went to colonialism, colonizing us. A little ass country of Belgium, little ass country Leopold of Belgium got the big prize. At the Berlin Conference of 1884-85 in Berlin, Germany, all these crackers sat around a table. Not one African in sight, because why? To them, we were not human. We were not human. And they sat at the table and they, you know, I'll take this, I want that, and you take that, I'll take this. In Berlin, at the Berlin Conference, Leopold in Belgium got the prize, the middle and the heart of Africa, the middle and the heart of the world. That's why the Congo has more mineral wealth than any place on the planet. Still, after hundreds of years of being raped, pillaged, and plundered, it still has more. It can still elevate the continent, elevate the people to great heights. Still. And that's what I hope happens with what's going on now. When these other brothers, let me play this particular piece. It's interesting. I'm going to play a number of pieces today with the concept and attitude that Africa must unite. There is only one way, family, and you heard me say it, and that's unity. There's only one way. It ain't Jesus. It ain't Islam. In fact, if one makes the argument, the religions are detrimental to Africans. Oh, man, I tell you. Yeah. Here you go.
Africa, Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo, the president of oil-rich Equatorial Guinea, has been in power for 46 years. He is currently 82 years old, much older than Traoré. Yet the West won't call him a dictator because they benefit from his looting and oil. Paul Biya, the president of Cameroon, has been in power for 43 years. He is currently 91 years old, yet France is fine with him and won't call him a dictator because he is their puppet and does whatever they want. Yoweri Museveni, the president of Uganda, has been in power for 39 years. He is currently 79 years old, yet the West is not trying to remove him because he serves their interests and they benefit from his corruption. Ismail Omar Guelleh, the president of Djibouti, has been in power for 26 years. He is currently 77 years old, yet the Americans don't call him a dictator because his country hosts the largest U.S. military base in Africa. As Thomas Sankara once said, if you see the West praise me, just know that I have betrayed you. The West doesn't go after the leaders who are destroying, looting, and exploiting Africa. They go after the leaders who resist their imperial systems, their neo-colonial control, and those who fight for total economic liberation. They killed Thomas Sankara and supported Blaise Compaoré. They killed Patrice Lumumba and allowed Mobutu Sese Seko to destroy Congo. They killed Muammar Gaddafi, and now Libya is a war-torn, modern slave depot nation. The West's only interest is their own.
That's how they do it. That's what they do, family. And for years, decades, these men have been in a position. And the position that the people are in is deplorable. It's disgusting. Many countries that doesn't have even the tenth of the wealth, the mineral wealth that Africa has. But because they understand the importance of development for their country, even China, Japan, North or South Korea, the Philippines, some South American countries, Central American countries, and in Central America, Mexico. They say that Mexico will be a world leader. Mexico. I just thought about that because many people think that Mexico, things are cheap. Things that are made in Mexico and so forth. Just like back in when I was a kid, things, because after the Second World War, you know, after they dropped a bomb on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, devastating them. Mexico trying to recover, making products. In fact, they would come to the States with a camera, you know, to see how things were built. Look what happened. They became such a leader in the world, in particularly in technology, in electronics. They knocked all the U.S. TV people out of the box, didn't they? Sony, Samsung, and all of them. Japan became a world. In fact, to the point of the G8 or G7, I think it was at the time. I don't know what G it is now, but it still ain't shit. But they allowed, or they made, or they, whatever the case be, Japan to be a part of that. Because why? Economically, they were just as powerful. Yes. The G8 or G7, whatever. Because the cars. In fact, it was funny that Lee Iacocca, he was with Chrysler. And they had a meeting with Japan. And because they said, man, these imports, man, y'all killing our auto industry. You're killing. As you know, some of them fell by the wayside long ago, and some of them downsized. Pontiac's no more. Oldsmobile is no more, you know. But they said, look at your structure. That was an interesting piece that I remember back in the day. I can't remember. Edward Demings. Edward Demings had a structure, a management structure that the United States didn't buy into, but Japan did, because it wasn't top heavy. It wasn't like the CEO at the top, a layer of vice presidents, another layer of this, with all the worker people at the bottom who developed the product, but who don't get paid as much. And so everybody gets paid big time. And to me, what really made that a damn mess is Ronald-ass Reagan. I can't stand it, but they love him. Ronald Reagan was one of the worst presidents. But nobody would beat this asshole. I'm serious. I don't know how long I'm going to live. I hope I live a few more years. But nobody. In years to come, when they talk about this, he will be the worst president in the history of this country. There will be such things wrote about him, and nothing will be good, because there's nothing good. Right now, of course, those who are his sycophants, those who kiss his ass, his flat, funky, stanky ass, they can't write something that people will buy, because people know. He's terrible. He's disgusting. He's a despicable human being. Here he pardoned them folks who stole all that damn money, big time. Here he, under deception of talking about Caucasian South Africans, the Afrikaners are being killed, and so we're going to allow them. We're going to put a special provision to allow them to come into the country. I just seen another piece on that. That's going to be deep, too. So, you know, to me, family, of all this insanity and all this madness, there has to be in your mind, people, there ain't a damn thing that you can do to change this for us. We have to get out, just like that movie. Just like that movie. Get out. Get out. That's right. We have to educate ourselves. Yes, you may send your child, because this is what the European Jews did for a long time. they knew that it was important for them to be as strong as they are. They had to have the education of their children in their hands. Yes, they sent them to public schools or private schools or whatever. But when it talked about what does it mean and what does it take to be a European Jew, that was their responsibility. They might have had evening classes. They might have been in a synagogue or a center. But that was their responsibility. They got that information. They didn't allow the public schools to solely teach their children like we have and to corrupt the minds of our children. Even in private schools, the only schools that I trust, independent African-centered schools. And some of them don't look for any money from anybody outside of our community. Thank you, sweetheart. Oh, I tell you. See, Nat, you knocked me off track, girl. I know you're laughing. But, you know, I tell you, I'm going to play a couple cuts here. One cut I'm going to play. I don't know why it got into my mind. The Brothers Johnson, Thunder Thumbs and Lightning Licks. 76 or 77, yeah, when I first came on the fire department. But guess what today is, family? Guess what today is? That's right, the birth date of our Princess of Soul, I think they call her. The Princess of Soul. Gladys Knight. Today is Gladys Knight's birthday. Yeah. She's 81 years old. She's 81 years. She was from Atlanta. She was born here in Atlanta. The Empress of Soul, as she's known. The Empress, not the Princess. The Empress. Yeah, see, that's a bigger, more lofty title. You know, Princess, you always think of somebody young, you know. Queen, though, that's another thing. That's Aretha. That's Aretha. But Gladys is cold, man. Oh, man, Gladys was tough. I always like to remember when she won the, and seen it. I didn't see it the exact time she won it because I'm not sure I remember anything at that time. She's 81 years old. And I'm in the early 70s, so it's. But she was on the Ted Mack Original Amateur Hour, and she won. I seen a replay of it and the song she sung. Yeah. And then she put together, you know, her group, Gladys Knight. Well, first they were just called the Pips. And the Pips, they were named after. Their cousin, the Pips, inspired by the nickname of their cousin and manager, James Pip Woods, Gladys Knight and the Pips. The Pips performed at churches and talent shows and clubs, opening for popular acts, then signed with Brunswick Records in 1957 and began releasing singles. After a few lineup changes, the group debuted their first album in 1960 when Knight was just 16 years old. By then, she had recorded 5 songs and released her first hit single, Every Beat of My Heart. Yeah. The group's success was later halted by Knight's departure to start a family with a husband and musician, Johnny Newman, resuming soon after when she returned. Knight attended the historic Booker T. Washington High School in Atlanta. I just drove by Booker T. Washington High School. You know, they have that that one statue of Booker T. Washington lifting the cloak of the cover off the young brother, you know, at his feet. Yeah. Later transforming and graduating from another high school, Gladys and the Pips joined Motown in 66. Only three hits to their credit, Every Beat of My Heart, Giving Up, Letter Full of Tears. But man, she took off. She got Marvin Gaye's song, heard it through the grapevine. The nitty gritty, right down to the real nitty gritty, Friendship Train. If I Were Your Woman, If I Were Your Woman. I mean, Gladys, and the records that she had were just phenomenal, you have to admit. But I'm going to play Brothers Johnson, and then I'll play Gladys Knight. And what I'm going to play from Gladys Knight is my favorite, the soundtrack of Claudine. The soundtrack of Claudine. Yeah. That's, it to me, is just a fantastic. It's one of the great soundtracks, along with Car Wash and a few others. Even Which Way Is Up, Star God. You know, I love some good soundtracks. And so we're going to play that. So, brothers and sisters, we're going to play the Brothers Johnson, and then we're going to play Make Yours a Happy Home from Claudine. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on Time for an Awakening .com and Black Talk Radio Network. BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
That's Louis Johnson doing his Thunder Thumbs. But I was supposed to be playing Thunder Thumbs and Lightning Licks. You know, that's what I want to play. And somehow, I don't know, you know, I just be having all kinds of difficulties sometimes. Sometimes it's, everything is smooth, but sometimes I be having Thunder. So let me do this right quick, okay? Here we go, family. Okay.
Thank you. you're just smiling.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Once again, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Brothers Johnson, Thunder Thumbs and Lightning Licks. You just heard a little bit of Thunder Thumbs, which was Louis Johnson, who died in 10 years ago, 2015, this month. And, of course, the Empress of Soul, Gladys Knight. Gladys Knight and the Pips. And
I just have an affection for that soundtrack, Claudine, and the movie itself is just outstanding. So, yeah. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And we're talking about Africa Must Unite. I just played a couple of pieces that, a reason why, because it's serious. You know, we got to do this. It's imperative that we do this. And it must be done. It ain't something that's going to be way down the damn road. No, it is now. It is now. And with what's happening, it has to happen now. Everybody has to. I ain't saying you got to get behind Ibrahim Traoré. In fact, once again, if you ever heard me talk about what needs to be done, you know I'm not talking about an individual or a charismatic leader. We need a charismatic program. And we need all the brothers and sisters who understand this to be on it, to be on the program for the unification of African people. That's the bottom line. Everything else, family, is moot. You know? Yeah. But as long as they can continue to make us do this, you know, it's going to be very difficult for us to, you know, and I know there are some of us who say it'll never happen. I remember jokes, you know, about African unity, you know. But no, it has to happen. Either we do it or we die. Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die. Check it out.
This is the unwritten truth. Who are we? And why are we still arguing? You call yourself black. He calls himself a Moor. She swears she's an Israelite. Another claims they're indigenous. And guess what? The white elite doesn't care what you call yourself, because they still own you regardless. While we argue over labels, they cash checks off our confusion. The average African American doesn't even know who their great grandmother is. Most don't read. Most don't write, but suddenly they're spiritual historians. This is exactly what white supremacy wants, a fragmented people debating ancient bloodlines while their water's poisoned, their schools are trash, and their minds are broken. We owe thousands in debt. We suffer in silence with mental health issues. We don't know who we are, and worse, we don't know where we're going, and every second we stay divided, we stay conquered. They don't fear what we call ourselves. They fear what we build if we ever united. That's the unwritten truth.
President of the United States.
Farrakhan. That's the unwritten truth. They don't. They don't fear us. Because they know if I control a man's thinking, Carter G. Woodson, I don't have to worry about his actions. If I make that person an outcast, he will be an outcast. If I keep sending him to the back door, even when there is no back door, he will make one, because his training have led him so. That's why we have to. We have to. To me, I know the person in the armed services took an oath, an allegiance to this madness. I understand that. But if I, number one, I could never be in the service. Okay, I know I was on the radio with us a couple of, I don't know if it was recently or whatever, and I talked about it. Things weren't going well for me when I was living in Norfolk, Virginia, and I tried to join the Navy. It didn't happen because I wasn't supposed to, you know. See, I'd be a firefighter any day. I couldn't be a police officer. I would not. You couldn't pay me. You could offer me six figures a month. I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't take it. I'd fight fire.
I do EMS work and helping people. But I couldn't be a police officer. I can't defend this madness. And I know some good brothers and sisters, conscious brothers and sisters, who did that job. Who did their job well. The League, the brothers and sisters in the organization, the League of Martin. In fact, I've been fortunate to speak at the Black Police Officers Association a few times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I couldn't do it, family. No. It's not in me to do it. Yeah. Let me play this next piece that I want to play, family. No. Yeah. Sorry, family. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a piece that's interesting only because, you know, there's been 18 to 20 attempts on the life of Ibrahim Traoré, because when there was a person, you know, that could bring us together and has shown that they could do that, these crackers knew that they had to kill him or her, whoever. Just like that cracker, Howard Nichols, we must never let them develop anything. We must keep them poor. We want these resources. We want them cheap or free. We must keep them poor. We must keep them divided. Well, there's another attempt on brother's life. And Russia came to his aid. And I know we're supposed to hate Russia. And I ain't crazy about Russia. I ain't crazy about white folks, period. Period. But they've proven to be an aid. They've proven to be someone that they, you know. Here's a piece to piece.
The sky above Africa turned deadly. American fighter jets closed in. The West wanted one man silenced. But they didn't count on who was watching from the East. In that moment, the world held its breath as Vladimir Putin made a call that changed everything. The world was already tense. Captain Ibrahim Traoré, Burkina Faso's defiant young leader, had done the unthinkable. He expelled French forces. He nationalized gold mines. And he openly declared, Africa will no longer kneel. The West watched him like a ticking bomb. Then came the whispers. He was headed to Mali to finalize a military unity pact with neighboring nations. If successful, it would form a powerful anti-imperialist alliance across West Africa. Washington was furious. That evening, Traoré boarded an unmarked aircraft bound for Bamako. But high above Nigerian airspace, something chilling happened. Two American F-35 fighter jets, stealthy and lethal, appeared on radar. Traoré's pilot turned pale. They're locking on us. No radio contact. Sir, we may not make it. On the ground, international news blacked out. African satellites went dark. Burkina Faso's military couldn't reach their leader. It was a silent operation until a signal pierced the airwaves. From Moscow, Russian satellites had been tracking everything. Within minutes, two Sukhoi Su-57 Russian stealth jets launched from a hidden base in Central Africa, unknown to the world. Secure transmission reached the American squadron. This is Colonel Voronov of the Russian Aerospace Forces. You are approaching a protected diplomatic transport. Turn away immediately, or face consequences. The American jets hesitated. Their orders had been secret. But this was global. Putin had put his hand on the table. Back in the skies, Traoré remained calm. His voice to the pilot was steady. Let them see we do not run. Let them see Africa stands. The American jets veered closer. Then suddenly, alarms blared in their cockpits. They were locked on. Russian missiles tracking. Every move, a long pause. Then silence. The American jets turned away. Traoré's plane safely touched down in Bamako. A crowd had gathered, not knowing if he would live or die. When he stepped out, untouched, unbroken, the people wept and chanted, Traoré! Traoré! Africa rises! Hours later, Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the world. We will not stand by while nations who seek freedom are silenced by gunfire. Africa must decide its destiny, not Washington. Traoré never commented on the incident directly, but in a speech days later he said, "They sent jets to silence me, but the sky itself refused, because this is bigger than one man. This is the cry of a continent, and the world is listening."
I say, oh, yeah. The next piece, yeah, I mean, let me play this right quick.
And said that the president of Burkina Faso, Ibrahim Traoré, has become a threat to his own people. You already know what that means, what that sounds like. That means it's time for us to go liberate the people of Burkina Faso. And of course, they're going to use a black man. The blackface is always a house nigga. Every time they're going to use, like, every time they want to use violence on black people, they use a black man from the West to come bring it on Africans. This guy got on U.S. Senate hearing and said that the president of Burkina Faso, Ibrahim Traoré, has become a threat to his own people. You already know what that means, what that sounds.
Yeah, Langley. And I like to play that, find that piece that I had with Langley talking about, I'm not going to apologize to Traoré. I'm an American general. I'm an American. You know, I know, family, I know what we've done. I know we've pledged allegiance. We've taken positions. We've taken high positions in the military. The Benjamin O. Davis, Jr. and Sr., many others, sisters, and so forth. You know, that, and the reason why we rose, it wasn't because it was affirmative action or DEI. It was because that we're that good. Because whatever we put our mind to it, whatever, that's the thing that these Caucasians, most of them don't know, but those who are in control do know, that whatever field that we apply ourselves into, we can dominate. Whatever area that we apply, if it's unfeathered and undiscriminated, and the access is equal, and we apply ourselves to it, yeah. But of course, in the field of the military, you take an oath; it is theirs. Yeah, you rose through the ranks. You're a high high appointed official. But your allegiance is to the United States. Your allegiance is to this country. And so that's what you got to do. Langley had to, and I don't know, in the back of Langley's mind, I can't read that man's mind, but I know how he appeared on television, how he appeared to the public. Yeah, and that's what he better do. Damn. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. There's a few of you are in the queue. Hit star twice and let us have conversation. We're talking about the importance of Africa uniting. Africa must unite. Brother Ted Lusk, how you doing?
Finding yourself, Baba Ochi. Good morning.
Good morning. All right.
I just love the pieces that you find, and these are YouTube pieces. That's correct?
Yes. The YouTube pieces. There's some of them are Instagram. Some of them are, you know.
It's just interesting, though. It really is. It goes to show. It's so interesting in that at this time in space, on the 28th of May, 2025, approximately 11:30 Central Standard Time, right?
Right.
That we're in this space and time, but what in the world is going on in the other space at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting how you kind of wonder, and especially when you have to go to work and you have to do tons of other things, what is it like on the other side of the world?
Yeah.
What is
yeah.
it like below the equator and in the southern hemisphere? But we're all melanated people, right?
Mm-hmm.
As part of this this Pan-Africanism that eventually has to come together, I think.
It has to. Oh, and, it must.
And so we just can't isolate ourselves at just one space and time, right? Mm-hmm. I think. And I really do think that it's, of course, programs such as yourself, this program, African Perspectives, as well as others. One has to read. One has to involve oneself in other sources of information.
You must. You must. News. Yes, you do.
Yes, you have to. You just cannot just rely on just one source. No. And it has to be different sources. And thank you so very much, as always, to bring these pieces out. I've made myself a very avid listener of this program, especially at this particular time of the day. Right. And I just want to make sure that I chime in. I want to make sure that I listen. And above all, I want to make sure that I'm still learning.
Right on.
And for me, that's what I'm here for.
Right on, brother. I appreciate that.
Yes,
I really do, brother Taylor.
And one other small little point. I was with a couple friends of mine, some brothers who decided to take a little trip to Atlanta, and wound up going to the Metro bookstore.
Ah, yes.
The Greenbrier Mall.
Yes,
and I'm like, my goodness gracious. It slipped in my mind. I said, man, I should have called, but I didn't.
Yeah,
but I did get a chance to buy Baba Baruti's Iwa book.
Okay.
The warrior character and stuff. So, yeah, just wanted to make sure that I supported that endeavor there.
Good. Did you talk to Mama Nia?
Yes, I did. I did for right a little on. Short time that I was there.
Right on.
Yeah. And so the other brothers that I was with also purchased a book to, again, financially support the business. Right?
Right on. Right on. Appreciate that, man. That's for sure. Right on, Brother Lusk. Okay, Jed. All right. You have a blessed day, man.
Okay. Peace and blessings, brother, as always. Still listening and learning, brother.
Right on. Peace. Okay.
All right.
Brother Irv, what's happening, my good brother?
Peace. Baba Oshi, everything's good. Thank you for pulling me up, Baba Oshi.
Okay.
Put me on the air. This the brother that just got off, Brother Lus, I agree with him 110%. He always comes up with a calm. He has a calmness about the way he speaks. So I'm scared of that brother. You know, you got to be scared of him once. But you're scared of him once it's quiet, bro. Don't come for him, man.
So you can see he's thinking, man. He's all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's thinking
before he leaves his mouth. He done already formed everything he's going to say. Yeah, he's
man,
strategic.
Dude, look, you ain't
he's strategic in that way.
Him. You ain't going to sneak up
no,
on him.
No, you're not.
No. But I agree with what he's saying. And I say this all the time. We have a front row seat to history. And the history that's happening is always happening because the world is always continuing. But to watch these brothers in Africa as one day at a time, they take a bite out of this imperialism. And
right on.
You can see it posturing different now, you know, and we've seen the playbook before.
Right.
Oh, he's a bad guy. He's a bad player. He's an enemy to humanity, you know, because we're trying to spread democracy all over the world. Even though the world never asked for democracy, you're going to spread it to them because you have something to get out of it, Baba Oshi. I start to feel like these people in the United States, because they've been programmed by the TV, the radio, the newspaper, or whatever that you get your media from, it's the programming. And the programming has enabled you to build your own prison, be your own prison guard, and always talk about leaving but never leave. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
You can think about people where you grew up at. Man, I'm getting out of here. I'm no brothers in Baltimore, man. I'm getting out of here, man. Ain't nothing here for me.
Right.
30 years later, they're still there. They're still talking about, because they don't want to leave what their so-called family. Mm-hmm. They don't want to leave their friends. They don't want to leave the high school, the building that they went to high school. So my point is, the way this society brainwashes American Africans is to put them in a place, make the place not that good, but not that bad. And then you tend not to say, I can't. Man, ain't no way in the world I'm going to Africa and live around no damn lions and monkeys and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You've never been to Africa. And even if you do go, you were only there for a few weeks or a few days. Have you been back to Africa? See, I've been to the continent. And I can't wait to get back to the continent.
I say.
I'd love Don't get me wrong. There are people like anybody else, but just to be on that soil, the same dirt, the same land that my ancestors were in, that's spiritual to me. Mm-hmm, and I did mm-hmm. feel some spiritual awakening when I was in Africa. And that sure. may have been something that I think it's the same way these people stand up and say, God told me to do this, and Jesus is around the corner. They really felt that, and I believe them. Well, and
You went to Gory Island, didn't you?
Say it again?
You went to Gory Island, right?
Oh, yeah, I went to Gory. I went to Gory Island.
Yeah, see? Okay. And just being there is very spiritual. That's the touch right there, let alone to be in other parts of the continent. You know, to go into those dungeons, you know.
Oh, my God.
And to feel that and what it was like hundreds of years mm-hmm. ago of our people, you know, crammed up in those and then cramped back up into the hulls of those ships. I mean, you know, it's a hell of a feeling, man.
Then they showed you where the enslavers where they stayed. You know, they got mm-hmm. their place didn't look much better than me, but it was 100 times better than on the cold mm-hmm. ground in a cave. And then they would take you from the cave with all the people in, because these were caves basically. Mm-hmm. They call them dungeons, and then they would take you, when you would act up, they would take you from that place to one by yourself, which was 10 times smaller. So now you're cramped up. I mean, think about it, Bob Ocean. You can't even sit on an airplane for 4 mm-hmm. hours to fly mm-hmm. from the East Coast to the West Coast, or you got to get up and walk around.
Mm-hmm.
Our ancestors couldn't get up and walk around. The ceiling wasn't tall enough to get up and walk around.
No.
If they were claustrophobic, they would have lost their mind, mm-hmm. which is what they were trying to do. And remember, brothers and sisters, the Caucasians didn't take the weak ones. The Caucasians didn't take the ones that had illnesses and problems. No. They took the strong ones.
Right. That's why they had to go through that voyage. That voyage, you couldn't be a weak person and to endure that voyage. You wonder why 2 months.
No, I don't mean to talk over you, brother.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, brother.
No. And you wonder why when you get here, you see people like Malcolm X and King and Denzel Nezi, I'm not saying it correctly, but all these freedom fighters that you see, because these are the ancestors of the strong slaves that made the voyage, mm-hmm. the ones that endured and survived the voyage to get over here so that we can be who we are. And we have to continue this, Baba Oshi. This is not something that's going to be done by someone else. Yes, Ibrahim is doing some things, but Ibrahim can only do what we all do. Another, I heard the boy, he says it on Elliot's show, mm-hmm. that you can only rise as high as the condition of your people.
That's right.
I think Ibrahim knows that.
Mm-hmm.
He knows I can do well. It's like these African leaders before him. They all live in palaces. All the politicians got cars and Benzes and all this stuff. But mm-hmm. the people are struggling. The people, and it's not that they don't have food. It's that their minds are colonized. Mm-hmm. When I went to Senegal, everybody was eating. Everybody grew their own food. Everybody mm-hmm. had. We had a beautiful meal at a lady's house. We ate with our hands. We sat on the floor. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
It ain't the food. It's the mind that they want. They want mm-hmm. your mind. They want the gold mines and the mind in your head. They want, and once they get that, do whatever means necessary. And I mean that for white folks. They'll do whatever it takes to get you. If it's fear, I'll do fear. Mm-hmm. If it's foolery, trickery, they'll do that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so no, Ibrahim ain't falling for the okie doke.
No,
he's
not
fooled
all, brother.
By the Americans. Come on, mm-hmm. he's not fooled by Russia. He knows Putin is in and or China. He understands that.
Mm-hmm.
But he also understands he's going to do what's good for his people, not what's good for him or his family. You notice you don't see Trump walks around with his family behind him because they're mm-hmm. the only ones that'll listen to his foolishness. But Ibrahim, you never see that.
Mm-hmm.
Ibrahim's always about the people. He's always in a posture of defense. We're in a war.
Hey.
And the sooner we realize we're in a war, Baba Oshi, the sooner we will finish doing what we have to do in this country, because we've not built a prison for ourselves. Yeah. We're not our own gatekeepers.
Let me tell you what I like about Ibrahim Traoré is his calm demeanor. You know,
mm-hmm.
I remember a few weeks ago listening to a a piece where the woman who on a plane, she didn't know that it was Ibrahim Traoré as the leader of, you know, Burkina Faso.
The stewardess.
Yep, the stewardess. Yep, and wanted him to go back in the back.
You know? Wanted him to seat. Exactly. Wanted a seat for a white person. Correct.
Exactly. And it was so cool how he did it. And in fact, when they did land in Burkina Faso, she was arrested along with the other. Yeah, along with the Caucasian.
The white man.
That's correct. They were arrested.
That's correct.
You know.
That's what should have happened.
No doubt.
So, but no, and I saw that piece on. You know, anything Ibrahim, I'm on it. Mm-hmm. And I saw that piece where he needed a seat. They overbooked, and they wanted him to go back into the regular coach. Mm-hmm. And he said, "No, I'm flying business class up here, first class or whatever." That was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But it was more than that, Baba Oshie. It wasn't about the guy losing the seat.
Mm-hmm.
It was about him fighting imperialism.
Right.
It's about him. And everybody saw that.
Right. Standing up. Not cowing to whatever these crackers say you're supposed to do just because I said it. You know, I think that's the thing that our young people and us, period, as men and women, need to grasp and emulate the strength and the integrity, you know, of a leader. You know, now, once again, you know, even though they've tried countless times, just like they tried countless times to kill Fidel Castro with exploding cigars and shit.
They never could do it.
They could never do
they
it.
They never could do it.
Yeah.
They never could do it. And this, and Baba Oshie, this is what we need to be having conversations about. Burkina Faso, Africa's freedom, the Sahel states, all that needs to be discussed. We don't need to be wasting our time talking about the foolishness that's going on in the political system in this country, because this country's political system is predictable. In other words, they've done this before. This guy is doing nothing to the American African that hasn't been done to him before. Mm-hmm. The taking of his rights, the stifling of his speech, all those things have been done to African. We're going to take your welfare money. I'm glad you're taking it. Please take it. Take all of it. Let us stand on our own two feet. Let us understand how this thing works and what white folks will do to us. Mm-hmm. And then we will circle our wagons as American Africans. This will galvanize us. See, what you don't understand is when you started telling us we couldn't do something, that's when black people started marching up and down the street.
That's when you
said we couldn't. As long as you say we can do it, oh, we will take whatever butter biscuits or crumbs that you throw at us. But when you tell a black man that he can't do something, he stops calling himself the N-word. Mm-hmm. When you tell a black man that he can't do something, the black woman puts clothes on and a breast ain't sticking out and a booty ain't hanging out. She stops dancing because there's nothing to dance about. This ain't funny. If you saw the movie Sinners, you'll see where they imposed today's people with the people back
in the
then.
Past.
And they were dancing.
That was a good, beautiful.
They were dancing.
Yeah.
Same thing. Shaking their butt. The breasts are all hanging out. And the guy just rubbing all on the women.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, this cracker was coming in there to snatch their soul.
Mm-hmm.
To take your soul.
Yeah.
I ain't say your religion. I ain't say your money. I said your soul. Yeah. And when someone comes for your soul, they're coming for your integrity. They're coming for your mindset. Mm-hmm. Because they understand, Baba Ocean, you say it every time. The mind is the thing. They don't want your money.
Yeah.
They want your mind.
Yeah.
If they can get your mind, they got your children, your children's children. You got generational evil and food. And that's where we're at now. Baba Oshie, that's somebody else. Talk. You know I can go on and on.
I know you can. I appreciate it, too.
I hate these crackers. I'm sorry.
I'm listening. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I do, and I know hate is a strong word, because they hate us, and you know, and the problem is what they do to us, you know, what they do to us, and what they have done and continue to do. I remember a couple of times on Phil Donahue, you know, program, Mr. Farrakhan was on, and Khalid Abdul-Muhammad was on, and Muhammad Ali was on, and a few other strong, strong American Africans. In fact, the program he did on the issue is race, when he had Sister Soulja and Daruba Ben Wahan. You can get these brothers and sisters, the ones I'm talking about, all of them on YouTube. You know, I'm always saying, well, go to YouTube, you know, and you can get this. You put, just put that information in, and, you know, the issue is race. That fact, that was the first time I had seen Cornel West, you know. But you couldn't touch Sister Soulja and Daruba Ben Wahan. You couldn't touch them, you know. And you know, Sharon Pratt, who was the mayor of D.C. at the time, and many other, of course, a couple of European Jews. The issue is race, you know. And, of course, not understanding that things are done to us and why they're done to us. And it ain't about race, because there's no such thing as race. Race is not a real concept biologically. But it is a real concept. It's a real concept, you know, structurally. Because, you know, no, there's no such thing as race biologically. But it is a social construct that Europeans created, giving themselves the top position with us at the lowest position. That's why around the world today, in this moment, at this time, to be African or to be melanated, let me put it specifically, because many melanated people don't identify with being African. They don't even understand the centuries of Africans and how they got to where they are in the Philippines or in the Pacific Islanders and in other parts, even on places like Southeast Asia, where you see deeply melanated people. Or, of course, we know the brothers and sisters who are melanated in South America. Well, that's us. That's Africans. They were brought there. Same thing in the Caribbean. They were brought there. As the saying goes, the only difference between me and you is where the boat landed. We're the same people. But, of course, you're trained to be divided. So you don't want to identify with that. You know, you're like Dominican Republic. They're so damn color struck. It's sickening. It's sickening. I've been to Dominican Republic. I'll never go back. Especially how they treat Haitian people. But even those who are deeply melanated, they think that I'm from this country. I'm from this island. I'm not from Africa. You know, the divisions, the seeds of discourse that are sowed by the European deeply affect us. And it is incumbent upon us to work through them and to work with brothers and sisters of like minds. This is a transformation that needs to happen for us, regardless of whatever these Caucasians do. If something happens to Ibrahim Traore, and Lord knows I swear it doesn't, you know, I know that militarily, no, we can't. We're not there militarily, you know. I know that China would assist us. I know that Russia would assist us. And I know there's some other places that might assist us, you know. But still, this is our fight. This is our fight. You know, I would like to know that, but that's not how the Caucasian is. I'd like to know that they realize what we're doing and they say, hey, you know, we've robbed you. We've robbed you consistently over many, many centuries. Centuries. You know, many centuries.
We've robbed you, and there's still more that we need to rob from you, to take from you. So no, I'm not going to let you unify. I'm not going to let you speak with one voice and have a cadre of leadership that will challenge what I have done. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to overtly send an assassin, a hitman. And believe me, you know, there are some Caucasians that would love to do it. Because violence, murder, assassinations is what they're about. Yeah, I know he's been almost 20 times now. Almost 20 times. And I continue to pray that, you know, those who are around him are sincere to helping to protect him, you know, because that's what happened to Thomas Sankara. That's what happened to Patrice Lumumba. That's just like Langley doing the bidding for this hellhole here and so many other Negroes, you know. And because sometimes we make the atmosphere, such as the assassination of Malcolm, we help create the atmosphere to make it happen. Yeah, a dark face did it. He's been doing it in Africa and been doing it here. I don't know why that woman tried to stab Dr. King, you know, when he said if he'd have sneezed. Have you ever seen that piece? If I would have sneezed, you know. And of course, even when he was shot, not by James Earl Ray, proven, but by the authorities, he wasn't dead on that balcony until the Lorraine Motel, April 4th, 1968. He wasn't dead. He was still living. Taken to the hospital where he was smothered and killed. They put pillows over him and he was killed. Yeah, and then after they kill you, man, they, you know, yeah, after they kill you, they got all these things about you and even change what you were about and what you talked about. You know, yeah, man, oh man, I tell you, this is a good time though, family. This is a good time. You're seeing it. You're seeing things happen in real time. You're seeing how these folks are and how they operate. You know, things are coming to life. You know, I tell you, I don't know what changed me as a teenager and so forth as I was coming up. Well, truly, the autobiography of Malcolm X, and I had an understanding, at least I had a feeling, you know, about being more revolutionary. Then I began to read. Yeah, I thank God for the fire department, man. I'm serious, because I can go to work and read. Because on my off days, I wasn't going to be reading. I was out there. I was out there having fun. I should have been out there going to school and furthering education. Yeah, but hey, I wasn't that disciplined. But what I did get was the knowledge of self. I began to read our scholars, our historians, men and women who made tremendous sacrifices, and began to talk about them and then associate with people like my dear brother Tejumala Oluboni, good brother, and so many others so many others, men and women. I'm still and always will be grateful to Virginia Grant Stamper, her husband Russell Stamper, Judge Stamper. I always will be. Because that program in 68, I think it was, I learned a lot. Stuff you didn't know. I mean, let's be real. If you came up in the 60s, I mean, excuse me, in the 50s, in your education, you didn't learn about Frederick Douglass. You sure in the hell wasn't going to learn about Nat Turner. Because you weren't going to learn about those who resisted, those who put up a fight. You weren't going to learn about them. You're going to learn about those who helped contribute. Booker T. Washington, you know, George Washington Carver. You know, you ain't going to learn about those men and women who resisted, who fought, who challenged. And those are the ones that I wanted to know about. And so that year I worked in that program was just, then I went to a program in Chicago. Brother did a presentation. I took notes the best I could. I wanted to, man, do that program myself, really.
But I was, hey, Oshie.
Hey, Jay.
Listen, let me ask you a quick question.
Sure.
Do you think the autobiography of Malcolm X is the most influential book that black men have read in this country?
Well, that's a good question. I would venture to say yes. Because of how it came out and the time it came out. I would venture to say yes, it was.
When you think about it, anybody that has read that book has definitely made a life change in some way. Sure. Now, do all lose their Negro keenism? No, not at all.
No. Well, only reason because you're still in it, even though you're developing a consciousness, but you're living in this shit. You got to go to work. You know, you got to do all this stuff. You got a house, you got a mortgage, you got a car, you know, you got to live, you know. But one thing that's in your mind, at least to me, in the forefront of my mind, not in the back of my mind, but in the forefront of my mind, is that I have a knowledge of who we are and what we still must be.
It changes a certain value
within
you as a black person.
That's
you
right.
Identify as a black person in struggle. Mm-hmm. Now, how you take it to the next level is different for each individual. But I have never spoken to any black person that has read that book that has not seen it or used it as a change in the direction of their life. I don't know anybody. I mean, everybody that I know that has read the book has a certain degree of consciousness. Now,
definitely.
Is their behavior in that consciousness of the highest order? No, but they can't unless they're in menticide, not understand and see the white man for what he is.
Right.
I mean, it's once you read that book, you have a better understanding and clarity of who the white man is. Now, that don't mean you accept it, but you should have a basic understanding on white supremacy and how it works. And you know, that I guess that may be all you can ask for at this stage, but you know, the reality is, in every stage of life, conditions change who and what you are. That's what's going on in this country right now.
Right.
The conditions are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions, unfortunately, are not getting better for us as black people. It's really not getting better for white people either, because you remember when they got rid of these manufactured jobs in this country, that caused a lot of problems with white folks. Mm-hmm. Now you got this so-called middle class white people, and I'm just going to let it be known, with what's happening with AI and robotics, they're about to get wiped out too.
Of
this
course,
time.
Of course, Jay.
But they don't understand that.
Yes.
That's why I tell any kid that I try to deal with, I say, you gotta learn technology.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta understand technology and find you a place in technology so that you can survive this sugar honey ice tea. Because this thing is going to AI. And when it goes to AI, there's a lot of jobs that these white boys and white girls have had a lock on. They go lose. And once they lose, it's basically going to be over.
Well, the thing is this. You have Europeans are selfish and greedy.
Yes.
And that's just not against us. That's against society and
the
humans,
world.
The world. That's who they are. That's who they are. And so if the oligarchy says, if I can make more money, I will do so. If at the expense of other human beings, so be it. You know, you're disposable, you know. So if I can now can make a product through automation or through AI where I don't have to pay insurance, holiday off, they can work around the clock 24/7, 365. Then so be it. I'm making money on an hourly basis, daily basis, weekly, monthly. I'm making big money. And so.
And that's what they're doing to their people.
Yes. Any people, they don't give a damn.
No, they don't. It's sad.
That's why I always say, you know, I don't like to go to kiosks. I don't like to go to the store and run my food across the, you know, run my food across the scanner. I don't want to do that. There are more and more people and less jobs, you know?
Right.
And that's a messed up equation, but that's what's happening. And that's global. That's
why. And the sad thing is we're not educating our kids for the future, man. We just educate them, I guess, for the moment or whatever, but there's just certain fields that you have to force your kids into. And the way that society has cultivated this nonsense with rap music and mm-hmm. basketball mm-hmm. and football, I mean, it's just sad. And you could tell it's cultivated in a certain way because at one time, we were the dominant players of baseball. Now, we ain't even really in the baseball.
No.
For what reason, I don't understand. And I, you know, I can be honest with myself. I stopped watching baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I used to enjoy baseball. Now, I don't even watch baseball the way I used to. I try to keep up with it on a superficial level. But what has the Dominicans and Venezuelans and all them, they're now the stars of baseball because they use that to improve sure. on their impoverished youth.
Right, and they have an opportunity.
It's interesting.
Right, and
but look, I know your time is up,
yeah,
man,
yeah,
so go ahead
right.
and do your thing.
All right, Jay. Appreciate you, man. You have a good
appreciate
day.
You.
All right, brother. Yeah, I thank all those who listened and who called in. I appreciate that. That's a tremendous to keep this program going. But once again, on this program, we're going to talk about independence. On this program, we're going to talk about self-determination for African people. And, you know, and that's what this is about. Independence, self-determination, liberation. That's why, you know, I was highly upset with them Negroes at the AU talking about Africa, damn Africa Day. No, it's African Liberation Day. And, of course, we're going to talk about Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words
of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. A Bibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a blessed day. See you on Friday.